So what's so good about Real Housewives of Salt Lake City?
I thought there's like years of mythology to understand it all, right?
If you are a member of the cast of Real Housewives of Salt Lake City, Heather, Whitney, Lisa, Meredith, Angie K, and yes, Monica, if you have any interest in going to an indie rock festival in your town of Salt Lake City, we are playing Kilby Block Party in the second week in May, and I absolutely was blown away by your most recent season.
Vampire Campfire, episode 2.
I'm Bayo. I play bass, and I'm also one host of Vampire Campfire.
I'm Ezra. I play guitar, another host of Vampire Campfire.
And I'm CT. I play drums.
And I guess we should also say that
we're a band.
That we're a band, and that we have an album called Only God Was Above
Which
Us,
which is available for pre-order now.
I want to say this is important. This is the final episode of Vampire Campfire where we will be able to say you can pre-order the album, which comes out on April 5th.
So not in stores yet, but in stores soon.
Yes.
Pre-order and pre-savable.
Yeah.
Now.
And we did recently receive the actual vinyl.
Mm, we did.
And it's beautiful. And the vinyl really did turn out great. I'll admit, I went back and forth about if it should be double vinyl or one vinyl.
Well, I told you, I was recently reading Phil Collins' autobiography, and he described that Genesis had ran into the same problem. I think that they ended up squishing it on to make it a single LP, but they regretted it because it sounded much worse.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, those are cutting edge guys at the forefront.
Always pushing
recording
the boundaries.
Absolutely. Technology. They know how to make a good sounding record, and
right.
That must have killed them. And you know, we talked about it with the label, and to their credit, the label said, make the version that's going to sound good. And I was like, all right. I was always raised my whole life to hear that, you know, people work at corporations are always about that bottom line, but they said make something that just sounds good, because this album's 48 minutes. If you get into like real hardcore audiophile vinyl junkie people, they say never go more than 20 minutes aside.
Yeah.
And actually, let's make something that sounds good for the people who actually still want to own vinyl. But then when I actually picked it up, and it's got like the gatefold and everything, it's like this hefty thing, I was like, this rules. I'm so glad that this is like this kind of double vinyl. We have two different vinyl sleeves.
Two great pictures of us.
Two great pictures.
Absolutely.
Of the boys. One is a jumping pic. Or at least I'm jumping.
A classic photo technique.
A classic photo technique. And the other one is more of a serious portrait. This is the beautiful subway image.
Well, there's a guy who looks like Ezra, but recently confirmed is not Ezra, with kind of a weird perspective laying down in the subway. It's just a bombed out subway car. There's some cool ads. It says Vampire Weekend. Other side, bunch of lyrics, bunch of credits. An image of Ezra's father that is incredible. And Only God Was Above Us in large newspaper fonts.
So we just signed 588 vinyl copies of Only God Was Above Us, clear vinyl, that we're going to sell at the Austin show. We signed all those copies, and there's two Easter eggs.
Two Easter eggs.
Because we were signing them at rehearsal, and who stopped by rehearsal but legendary producer Ariel Rechtscheid, and we said, hey, why don't you sign one of these? Most of them say our three names, and then there's going to be one in gold writing where he wrote Ariel, and then at the bottom, the L turns into like a big LA, like a Dodgers hat. And what's the other Easter egg?
So the cover, it has the three of us signing it, but inside one of them, string arranger, musical genius, live keyboard player Will Canzoneri signed the credits. And that also is a one of one.
All right, what else is going on? So what's so good about Real Housewives of Salt Lake City?
Years of mythology to understand it all, right?
Right.
Of course, it's a whole universe. What ended up happening is that a woman who was new to the show, she turned out to have been an online troll of all the other women for years. It was an incredible, stunning reveal.
Under pseudonyms?
Yes. Yeah. Her name was Reality Von Tees. That was her anonymous Instagram. I mean, one member of Real Housewives of Salt Lake City, Jen Shah, she is currently serving time in the federal prison for financial fraud. And so that was that she got arrested by the FBI during the second season.
Whoa.
God. It's an incredible program, and like I cannot recommend it enough.
Maybe even Dinner on You before the show? If they want to
hang?
Sure,
absolutely. I would love to hang before the show, and just, you know, it would be my honor and my privilege.
And I imagine, like, if you're a Real Housewife, you probably got to be very active on social media.
Yes, and they all say that the social media element of it is the worst part, that they, you know, it's like fun to film and
right,
you know, play the game and all that stuff, but you do open yourself, you know,
oh, yeah,
you are,
course,
they are gladiators,
right,
jousting, you know, fighting for our entertainment, and the social media element of it can be particularly difficult.
The way you're describing this, it sounds like Road Rules. Is there more challenges, or you're just saying, what's the game here? What's the game?
It's just the game of being a housewife.
Okay.
So you're, you know, the fighting
gap,
and all that kind of stuff, okay, and the plot and stuff.
Right, and they're not totally getting to fully be themselves. You know, there's a little bit of kayfabe, right?
Absolutely, and as, you know, there's a famous quote from CT's favorite movie, We All Wear Masks, Mr. Ipkiss, and I think that, you know, probably every person who's ever been on a Housewife as their version of themselves when they're filming and their version of themselves when they're not filming. I think
right,
that's probably true for all reality stars. There all is right, like an element on Real Housewives where there is a cruelty, whether it be between the housewives or between the audience and internet trolls and the housewives.
Right.
And it really reminded me of the lyrics to our most recent release, the song Classical. So, you know, the video's been out for a couple days and stuff like that. So
yeah,
how are we all feeling about that? What do we want to say about it?
Feeling great. I know people probably think that I'm just trying to hype people up. I love everything we've released so far. Deep down, I still think people haven't heard the best songs. It's an album, so they're all like very important. I mean, but Classical, I do think is one of our great recordings. Like, it really just turned out like super cool, and it's also the type of song that I think, I feel like if you look through like the early work, you know, obviously there's like the early punky stuff, the high energy punky stuff. And then you get to A Step by Modern Vampire, slowing it down, getting a little bit tip of the hat to 90s hip hop. But this is the first song that actually combines a little bit of like that jazzy early 90s hip hop energy with like the kind of up-tempo punk energy.
Well, I remember working on this song, the three of us, in sort of the higher COVID era when we were just the three of us playing in,
right,
in different rooms with our headphones to keep it safe and keep it appropriate.
That's
for the,
right,
for the time period. Yeah, this one was fun. I remember there was like one day where like a drum beat came, and there was, mm-hmm, there was one day where there was a leap was made that wasn't the final version.
Yeah.
But like definitely a lot of elements that are in the final version, I think, like kind of came in this one afternoon of us playing. I remember being really sort of excited and feeling it gel to some extent.
I remember that first jam session, clocking that the groove that you were playing felt kind of like, it was like high energy but jazzy.
For me, it's probably my favorite recording on the record, but not my favorite song.
Interesting.
I think there's a divide and a distinction, but I remember hearing the just sort of like first round of masters and being like, wow, this one, it really achieved its goal that it set out for as a recording. And like, I think it sounds so cool and unlike anything in our discography before that. And it's been, you know, we've been playing it together now for a couple months in rehearsals. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to rip pretty hard live.
And I thought when we were discussing the order or with which to release songs from this record, and the first drop is available to listen to now, is Classical and Gen X Cops. To me, even tempo-wise and feel-wise a little bit, represented some polar action of like a really up-tempo and kind of fast and choppy and a slower, more stately song. And then Classical is the third one. To me, always, I envision it as like a fastball down the middle.
It's the perfect synthesis of Capricorn and Gen X. So for some of our newer fans, they heard this like, man, man, Classical takes me back, man. It's like, it's got
that first single drop from 2 weeks ago.
It's got a little bit of that Capricorn energy that I've always loved. But then, you know, that fat, more fast-paced kind of...
That Gen
X. That Gen X. And, you know, to hear that kind of combined, I didn't think the boys could do it. I don't know how many people have spent time analyzing the lyrics, if at all. You don't have to. But one thing I've thought about is the untrue, unkind, and unnatural. One thing that's funny about putting untrue at the top of the list is that untrue could invalidate the entire statement.
Oh.
By putting it at the front.
Okay.
So it's like, actually, none of this is true.
Right.
That, don't worry, the cruel with time doesn't become classical. When I've thought about the lyrics, you know, long after recording the song and I was playing it, there's times where I started to lean more towards the other version of untrue. Untrue, like no loyalty, unkind, and unnatural. Just like there's something wrong with this whole thing. Disloyal, not nice.
After you sing the lyrics over and over again as we're drilling the songs and playing it over and over, is there a moment of like peak meaning to you? Is it like, you know, when you record it, it has one meaning, and then does anything reveal itself?
Even some really old songs, when we go back into them, they take on new meanings. I mean, obviously, hindsight's 20/20, but even that phrase, hindsight is 20/20, I try to think that as a positive thing. Like, yeah, that's how it works. You want some 20/20 vision on something? Get some hindsight. So like it's cool. Like that's the nature of things. So in a way, I like going back and like thinking more about some of these songs. Like especially like lately, I've been thinking a lot about Modern Vampire songs when we play them. And I think like when the album's ordered, that takes on a new meaning. I noticed something about the order of the albums and like clusters of songs. I'm like, those together have a certain tone, and I see the change from the first four songs to the middle three to the final. I actually see that, and it made me think more about what this album's really about. Even like hearing the songs in the final sequence gave me new thoughts about them and like what the lyrics were actually trying to say. Even when I look at like the first album, which I know we had our haters, or specifically I had some haters, where people would be like, this doesn't make any sense, whatever. But I look back on a song like M79, and I'm like, kind of like, come on, this is like an impressionistic tale of a young person taking the bus between the Upper West Side and the Upper East Side. No, you know, little things like Pollination Yellow Cab. Is that bordering corny from a poetic point of view? Pollination Yellow Cab? I don't hate that. And in any way, I'm kind of like, well, right, it's whimsical. It's a bit of a whimsical song. What's the worst thing you could say about it? It's a little bit twee. We need a little twee every now and then. When you think more about a drum part, what does the rhythm tell you?
The shortest and most direct answer is I feel the youth in them, both the enthusiasm and also the lack of knowledge of how it all worked. Other than messing around on Herbie Hancock's Chameleon at breaks in high school jazz band.
Right.
I had never played drums before Vampire Weekend.
And I think it's safe to say of everybody in the band, you've had the biggest transformation. Me and Bayo, even if we hadn't been like playing our instruments all the time or whatever, we might have felt more comfortable on other instruments. We both had some basic insight into what we were doing. Whereas for you, like you said, getting on drums then, you hadn't taken a lesson in your life. You didn't know your paradiddles from your...
For my flams. My flam. The independence of limbs was a big thing that I didn't even know was a thing. That's right. Why most of the first album is like both feet at all times.
Yeah.
There really isn't a lot of variation in that. But even the song like Cousins, which was on our second album, but in my mind originated in the first album touring and a lot of soundtracks.
Yeah,
just kind of like, what was I doing here? It's interesting for me, I think, and maybe for you guys, I don't know, but to try to both get more skilled and have more options available, but then also stay at a certain level of unknowing.
Right,
yeah.
And like maybe this is like the beginner's mindset we talked about last time or something, of expanding the box of what I'm physically able to do, but somehow keep whatever the spark was of those early things that worked really well and I didn't think about it. Didn't know I had to think about it. They just kind of happened.
Right.
And now we're deep into a career that I know too much almost. And when I think about it, I find it's usually not as good or not as inspired feeling. I'm a better drummer now, but can I still come up with the cool shit?
I bet you probably could not have played Cousins when the band first started.
Definitely not.
Because
that has that youthful enthusiasm and perhaps the kind of like naive, unstudied vibe that you're talking about, but still it's like it's just like fast and like precise. There's something about classical in a way. That song does have that combination of a guitar riff, a drum beat. It's got a beat that's very vampire, guitar riff that's vampire. I also want to say, I love how the video turned out.
People may not know this, but there will be guests sometimes on Vampire Campfire, and this will be the first ever guest on Vampire Campfire, and I've been very excited about this since it came together. I barely slept last night.
He stole the show in our video.
Absolutely.
During the bridge, he's dancing. It's our guitar tech, Josh Goldsmith. And why don't we just bring him out?
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome.
Please welcome
to Vampire Campfire, Mr. Josh Goldsmith.
When I first heard about Vampire Campfire, I thought the campfire was a metaphor for your creative process, but now I see it's just an actual campfire. It's just a campfire.
And you thought it was just computer graphics on that first episode.
But this smoke is not computer generated.
Thank you for being here with us.
First guest?
Your first guest.
It's my pleasure. I genuinely feel honored.
You've worked with us on and off for what now? Six, 7 years?
Yeah, about 6 years. I mean, I started, beginning before the last album cycle, before the Father and the Bride album cycle, and we did spend a lot of time in rehearsals preparing for that.
Do you want to tell the good folks at home how much time we spent in rehearsals?
We spent something like, 14 to 16 months together, like preparing. Am I exaggerating, or is that about right? We began with 14. Shows. We began with festival shows, and the album was not finished yet. And then the release was, pushed back and back and back, and then eventually released. And then we started the cycle, but then the cycle got cut in half by COVID. So we did a huge part of it and had many big shows, including a sold-out MSG in the Round and shows like that. But by the end of, an Australian festival, we were, at the edge of going to South America.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then, and then I remember coming home. We did a festival gig in Florida, and then coming home, and even on the cab ride home. Okeechobee. Did Okeechobee Festival, and on the cab ride home, I remember talking to the driver about hoarding toilet paper for this oncoming apocalyptic situation.
The driver was already hoarding?
He was already hoarding, and I was assuring him that there was no need to hoard toilet paper and hand sanitizer, and I couldn't have been more wrong.
You know why there was no toilet paper? When we talk about toilet paper in the world, there's actually two kinds of toilet paper. There's home consumer toilet paper, and then there's commercial toilet paper. When you go to a restaurant, the toilet paper, the ply is usually not as nice as the toilet paper you have at home. So all of a sudden, massive disruption. There's not enough consumer toilet paper to supply it. So there's a run because everybody's going to the bathroom way more at home than they are in other places.
Right. Oh, right.
And that was what the disruption was to the supply chain.
They should have been buying that single ply restaurant.
Or just breaking windows into a restaurant and getting in there and stealing the toilet paper.
Once somebody told me some long story about this guy on his way to work, he'd always stop into a fancy hotel and use the nice bathroom on the ground level. You don't have to be a guest for that.
Yeah.
That's a life hack for you. and that was his routine. Some people are very regular like that.
Yeah.
They drink their morning coffee off to the races. So he built his whole life around that.
Mm.
And then I think maybe there was a sad end to the story that the people at the hotel started to be like, why are you always in here, man? And I don't know. And then they weren't sympathetic to his cause. But who knows how many people there are like that. Maybe there's some other dude really blowing it up at home and it's close quarters. And his wife said, when you got to do that, you walk down to the local bar.
Absolutely.
And he said, you got it. You got it. You should love my life, and I don't.
it makes sense when you think about it. When, all of a sudden all these shared spaces are closed, then, the toilet paper demand doesn't
Now I'm thinking about the hotel guy. Who knows?
Maybe
this guy maybe had a phobia. Maybe somebody
said
something kind of mean to him once when he was a kid, like, whoa, man, you really made that nasty in there. Mm. And then finally he meets the love of his life, and he says, there's no way I'll ever do that in this pristine studio apartment that I share with the love of my life. And it's been a long road, and I didn't always pick well, but finally I met the love of my life, and I will not.
He has a checkered romantic past now.
Yes. He made some bad choices.
I'm not going to mess this one up.
He wasn't going to mess this one up. He's had his heart broken many times, and he's got it all dialed in. And he's just like, I know I'll can make if I leave by 7:15, I will still make it to work and still have a solid 20 minutes at the Waldorf Astoria. Anyway, I called you guitar tech. Is that the preferred nomenclature?
I don't even really know. I mean, with you guys, I was sort of hired to make the process of rehearsing at that stage fairly smooth and just, you know, having you be able to do this without a lot of friction and with some consistency. And I was given some responsibilities I've never really had in my life, like mixing the sound for you in the room.
Mm. Yeah, we should say it's like super, super important for what we do. You're our rehearsal engineer. We just were in a room with a couple techs, but playing these songs for about 4 months. And you made sure to record and mix everything that we played that I would then send out so that way everybody could listen back and make sure we're as good of a live band as possible. And we couldn't do that without
you. In fact, probably the snippet of rehearsals that you played last week was mixed by Josh.
Josh mixed that. He engineered that. Absolutely.
I mean, I appreciate that. You know, I mean, I feel like
okay, but what if you're hanging out at a fancy hotel and a guy ran in and started making small talk with you, and he said, what do you do?
Yeah.
What do you tell
people? Well, you know, usually we would say like backline tech, but if you don't work in our world, no one really knows what backline is.
Well, because one thing's for sure, the word roadie, nobody uses that. That's frowned upon.
It's a weird one because it doesn't really give you any sense of what any of us, because you know, roadie could refer actually to the musicians that tour. It could refer to any technical staff, which could be audio engineers or people that take care of
it. It just means you're out on the road.
It just means you're out on the road. It could be the bus driver. It doesn't really, it's not specific enough. It's almost sort of derogatory to refer to.
It's a slur.
People. Yeah, it sort of has that. So
nobody likes roadie.
If I was at the Waldorf Astoria meeting someone that I've never previously encountered after just having exited a 45 to 55 minute session in the toilet, the first movement of the day, I probably would not introduce myself as a roadie. Guitar tech even, or drum tech usually, you know, makes more sense.
Run us through like the highlights of your resume.
Actually, I mean, I was hired very randomly in my late 20s by the band Wilco and was hired as a keyboard and guitar tech without any previous experience doing such things. But a very close friend of mine showed me enough about what I would need to be able to do to work with a band that had a very kind of demanding program of guitar changes and things like that. So I toured for a couple years, but I felt really burnt out by touring. And then I went and got a master's degree in library science, which I don't even know if you knew that about me.
No, I didn't know that.
So I have a master's degree, which I have the paper. I've never used the degree to work professionally as a librarian, but I studied library and information science.
When you were in school, were you like, I'm in one place. They couldn't drag you back to the road. You were so burned out at that time.
I mean, there's even in the exuberance of what we do, and you know, there's a certain kind of very distinctive energy that is part of our experience. It is still always so exhausting to do what we do. From your perspective, from our perspective, it was just a very exhausting. So I needed, the answer is yes, I needed some time because I was basically entering a master's program as I was turning 30 and I hadn't been in school for 10 years at that point in time. It was really difficult to find that.
To lock back in.
Find that, like the ability to write an academic paper again or things like that. I mean, that was very challenging, but I plowed through the program.
So you went from one extreme to another.
One extreme to another. And at the tail end of that, I did feel something, a longing for returning to something that was more exciting. I felt challenged by being in a graduate program, but then when I got to the end of it, I didn't really know what to do with with a degree then. I didn't feel super motivated.
So who got you back on the road? Was it Wilco again?
No, I actually was hired by Andrew Bird at that time. Uh-huh. And spent a year with Andrew Bird. But around the end of that year, Wilco hired, you know, asked me to return. And I wound up working for Wilco for something like 11 years. I just have been continuously working for one band or another since then.
I'm kind of curious. Mm. If the energy of shooting the classical video felt a little bit like being on tour, whereas I think you were sitting around on set for about 6 hours, and then you had 5 to 10 minutes to really shine.
Yeah.
And you gave an absolutely impeccable, legendary performance.
Well,
and unbelievable stuff.
That's very generous of you. I mean, I was, you know, I mean, I felt the charge to do, you know, I wanted to do something that I felt that everyone would feel fit in with the energy and aesthetic of the video, and not exactly knowing conceptually. I mean, I sort of had a sense from being on set what was going on. When I finally saw the superimposition, I felt like, okay, now I really feel connected to this because of some ancient connection to Stonehenge. I felt like I could understand how, you know, I fit in with what you were all trying to go for.
The video has this kind of like throwback aesthetic, and like green screens make you think kind of like public access TV and stuff. But then, you know, we still like talk about like, well, there's something about the video. It's fun, but it doesn't exactly feel like goofy. There's something weirdly like compelling and serious about the whole video, even though fun is being had and green screens to some people are kind of funny. The Cruel with Time becomes classical. It obviously means something about in life, in the world, certain things win out, whether they're nice or not nice. Certain things win out, and what was once considered cruel becomes classical. The same way that sometimes people say every single one of us who probably identifies with some ethnicity or group, well, for all we know, those are the people who, you know, attacked our ancestors and, you know, whatever. Now we call ourselves this or that, but for all we know, we have some ancestor somewhere who's like, oh my God, they just slaughtered our village. Who knows? But there's something about when you think about what Stonehenge is and how it contrasts with all the, you know, the later classical English architecture and stuff is, you know, Stonehenge, nobody really knows who built it. You know, they say the Druids, but nobody really knows who the Druids are or were.
They don't.
Some people call it, you know, are they the original people of the British Isles? They're not. They were not Normans or Saxons or Angles or whatever. But there is something about in that moment of the song where the kind of like raw saxophone, where seeing person by themselves dancing, and then this image of like, we can take it for granted when you really think about it, an incredibly mysterious thing built by people. We don't even know what their culture was. People guess. There's like books, of course, saying, what did the Druids believe in? Why did they make it this way? What was their religion? What was their way of life? Maybe some of it's still hidden in modern English culture, but we just don't know.
I have like a few things that I actually want to talk about in regards to the aesthetics of the new record, because it reminds me so much of being at the age that I'm at, which is almost 50. You know, in the 80s, was very influenced by early hip hop and breakdancing culture. Not that I could really do that, but I remember being extremely inspired by breakdance. And that were even as I was born in Chicago, but grew up in the suburbs of Chicago. The impact of early hip hop culture was so broad. As I grew older, you know, probably a certain set of inhibitions, you know, came into play, and in my later 20s, and it's kind of around the time when I started doing touring work, where I just felt it come back out of me in a very spontaneous and organic way. The dancing is a thing I take with me, you know, when you know, I go out into the world, and it's a way that, you know, a very outward way that I present myself, and, you know, for whatever reason, I'm fairly uninhibited about it.
What are some of your favorite dance venues, dance nights, dance clubs?
Chicago was an incredible place to be in, as a younger adult for dancing. I actually found it very challenging to move to LA when I came here in 2010, because LA is entirely different in this way, and because of the way people socialize and often use their social circumstances as leverage for professional opportunities and things like that. I found that just going to places where there was the promise of dancing wasn't necessarily a guarantee for a sort of free and open experience like that, the way it was in Chicago. The one that scene that really turned me around was a scene called Funkmosphere, which you started on the west side in Culver City and then had at one point in time had two simultaneous parties on the west side and east side. So whenever I was not touring, I would go on a weekly basis to this and then start seeing familiar faces. And I felt like for the first time since I'd moved to LA, connected to a community of people. A lot has changed since COVID. A lot of parties disappeared because of COVID for obvious reasons in Los Angeles, which I don't know if I should, you know, broadcast this on in this public forum, but there's a lot of opportunities for late night parties, like illicit parties in non-traditional venues like warehouses, more or less raves.
It would be interesting if Vampire Campfire single-handedly ruined underground dance music in Los Angeles.
Just, Vice Squad.
Exactly. We killed LA.
I don't want to be responsible for that. So whatever we have
to do. You can leave it there. That's great.
Where are these warehouses?
Street addresses?
Yeah, exact addresses.
Okay, so if a Vampire Campfire listener sees you at the club,
yeah,
can they come say what's up?
Of course. There's no gates to pass through, man. You know,
hell yeah.
I try to be as friendly as I can, but
just don't shut down the rave. Well, thanks so much for joining us, Josh.
No, thank you for having me. Thank you.
We'll see you tomorrow.
Yeah.
What a great guest.
What a great guest.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
We've all been talking about, as naturally happens, rehearsing new album, reflecting on the catalog. We've each decided to do a top five, but with a kind of sassy twist.
My top five, and I did a little bit of a statistical deep dive, and
you mean where you ranked them?
No, there's some questions and stats.
Are you using advanced metrics?
I'm using cutting-edge generative AI technology, hundreds of thousands of dollars to come up with the ultimate top five list. So my top five list is top five Vampire Weekend songs with the word baby in the lyrics.
Wait, so these are your top five favorite songs with baby in the lyrics, or the ones that have the word baby the most?
I took the songs with the word baby in it, and then I sort of ranked them to personal preference. And again, this is like choosing between my five favorite children. My number five song with the word baby in the lyrics is the one with the word baby the most, which is
Dying Young.
Gotta be.
Yes.
Famously.
Now,
baby.
In my research, I uncovered what I believe to be a discrepancy in the printed lyrics and in the recorded lyrics of the song as to how many times the word baby is used.
Okay.
I believe the word baby is printed more in the lyrics than it's sung in the song. But I want you to guess how many times the word, baby is sung in the song and then baby is printed in the lyrics. And we'll do Price is Right rules. So let's go sung in the song.
49.
34.
52.
Oh, really?
Very, very good.
Yeah.
Very good stuff. And then how many times is the word baby printed in the lyrics?
Well, you told us it's more.
It's more.
64.
Correct. 68 is how many times the word baby is printed in the lyrics to Diane Young.
We got
to
correct that.
Radi, radiate. And then you're saying 80, 88.
Yeah. Maybe I wanted it to be an Easter egg. I honestly can't remember. But
that's
pretty cool.
11 years later, uncovering that Easter egg.
Okay, see, this is why we do this.
Yeah, yeah.
These little games to get into the catalog. Yeah, because I'm saying baby.
It's baby the second time, too, on
baby,
the way up.
Baby, right on radio 80. So I'm saying radio 80, you light on. This is not the right key. 80, 88,
yeah,
it's
yeah, then you go down on radio and up on 88.
I say radio 80, 88, it's a
your
light on 80, 88, it's a lifetime, baby, right on time.
Yeah. My number four, and it's interesting, it's part of a two-song drop where the first word is the word baby, was This Life. Great song.
Mm. Oh, yeah, because every versus baby, this or that. Yeah.
Now, the next choice, my number three, a song that I considered a kind of overlooked gem in the oeuvre, is the first song, and again, I could be wrong, but the first song in Vampire Weekend's history where the word baby is in the lyrics, chronologically.
Earliest example.
Yes, chronologically, the first baby.
And I was okay.
This is the baby of the babies.
Is it on an album?
Yes.
Which one?
Contra.
Is it I Think You're a Contra Have a Baby? Damn.
Well, it might. I don't think it does, though. I looked.
This is not my strong suit here. I'm just slapping the tubs in the back. Don't ask me about who's saying baby or not. Yeah. I don't know. Horchata?
Run.
Very close. Baby, please don't lose your faith in the good.
Oh, California English.
Yes. Which is a song that I love. And
yeah,
when we were talking about drum parts, I was listening to it on the ride over. And that's really one of my favorite drum performances of yours. One of my favorite fills of yours. Just to, you know, we haven't been playing it, but I think at some point we're going to want to, you know, revisit that because it's a great song. Right. Number two, I had to go with the absolute ripping opening track of Only God Was Above Us, Ice Cream Piano. It seems like a very fun baby. Yeah. There was one day you weren't at rehearsal,
yeah,
and we kind of did a gang vocal of the intro.
Oh,
that's
nice.
a fun thing to sing. And, you know, this is coming out, I guess, before that song comes out, but it's
something to look forward to.
It's an all-time baby.
That's the first spoiler of the
episode.
Ice
Cream Piano is an all-time baby.
It's an all-time baby.
Absolutely.
And then my first one is a beautiful song, Unbearably White. That's my number one Vampire Weekend song.
Baby,
with the word,
I love you.
Baby.
It's the best word.
It's a great word.
I mean, I don't want to get too personal, but like, it goes down the easiest as a term of endearment. England, some people call it, do you call it child sausage? You ever heard of that? Oh, sausage. Anyway, I'm just
sausage?
Saying.
Sausage? Yeah, yeah.
I believe you.
Maybe it's more of like a child thing. I don't know if you would like call your
significant other.
Your significant other.
You know about cheese nightmares?
When you eat cheese, you get nightmares?
It's what British people tell their children. Don't eat cheese at night because you'll get nightmares.
But is it totally made up?
It's just I don't know. I've never thought about it.
I've heard people say that.
It's a big British thing.
But I'm saying just like baby just goes down easy. What's up, baby? How you doing, baby? So, you know, it's like I think baby is up there with you and I and love is just like it's a great word for songwriting, it's a great word to use in life.
Absolutely.
What else are you going to call somebody? That's a great top five.
Thank you.
Actually, mine's half-baked, so you guys can help me with it. When I was in England a few weeks ago, did a lot of fun English stuff, and I did a bunch of interviews with various great DJs at Radio 6, maybe Radio 1, Radio 2. If I'm honest, I lose track. One of them was for a show that focused on indie, and they were asking me about some of my favorite indie bangers. If we purely were picking the top five indie bangers from Vampire Weekend, they're going to be very clustered towards the first album.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Realistically, you know, that 2007 to 2012 kind of wave that we were lucky to be a part of, that kind of American Apparel, Urban Outfitters. Maybe interesting to think, go through all five albums and pick the number one indie banger from each album. Even as we've grown and matured and explored other genres of music and other styles, I'd like to think that no matter what, we fly the flag for indie. So, you know, top five Vampire Weekend indie bangers, one from each album.
I mean, the first one is
it's gotta
slam
be
dunk.
A-Punk.
Slam
I mean,
dunk.
Truly. You know, I shudder to think if we didn't have that indie banger in our catalog. You can dance to it. Makes you feel good.
Well, that's one that we've been sending like videos of like club or indie club nights.
Oh, yeah.
And the drop A-Punk. Like, I feel like I've seen videos of that and it kind of goes off.
Yeah, I feel like every few years, like somebody sent me a video like some massive looking club and somebody's like just playing A-Punk.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, this is where it gets a little more interesting. What's the biggest indie banger on Contra?
I would say Holiday.
Okay.
Holiday or Cousins?
The dark horse would be Giving Up the Gun.
Right.
Because Giving Up the Gun is very much an indie goes pop, indie banger of the 2010 variety. But yeah, okay, let's go with Holiday. Modern Vampires.
Would you say Step?
I would say Worship You.
I think Step is too slow to be an indie banger.
I would say Worship You. It's like a little bit more.
I think, though, it's probably Diane Young.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
It has the most babies.
So far.
And it feels, you know, and that's the 2013. The indie banger era was kind of ending. That classic indie disco indie banger thing was ending. Diane Young maybe had a touch of that. Maybe it's a bridge between worlds. Now, Father of the Bride, probably our least indie album.
I would say Harmony Hall. Just when you think about Manchester stuff as like proto-indie, Manchester right. as boom, bam, proto. Bam, 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 yeah, there's bam, just a little bam. Bit, even though it's not a true like indie signifiers, I think of the record, it's right. the most indie banger.
And then Only God Was Above Us, I'm going with Prep School Gangsters.
I like that.
Because that's one of the, it's indie. It's pure indie. It's kind of like it feels right. Maybe long-term people look back and say, no, it's classical or something, but I'm going to call it Prep School for now. None of you guys have even heard that song. You'll be able to very
April
soon.
5th.
And then you tell us what you think is the biggest indie banger. And again, does indie banger mean it's the best song? No, it means it bangs.
Indily. It bangs indily.
All right, CT, what's your top five?
All right, well, definitely not as sassy. I've actually been thinking about this a lot because we've been rehearsing and going through the catalog, and something has always stuck out to me. It's kind of especially with Only God Was Above Us, our forthcoming album. This list is brought to you by the letter C. Top five Vampire Weekend songs that begin with the letter C.
Okay.
I don't know if I have a full count, but there's more than five. I had to cut some off. Number five, great song, short song, had a TikTok moment. I'm just going to go with Campus.
Right.
Love it.
A short, punchy, one of our first C joints as well. Number four, I'm going to go with Capricorn from the first single drop of Only God Was Above Us. Number three, a compound title, but it definitely counts. Got a double, actually. Cape Cod, Kwasa Kwasa.
Right. Oh, anything. Yeah.
Number two, we got to give it with the most recent single from our
classical.
Forthcoming.
Oh, yes.
I mean, I was trying to tie this into the promotional aspect of
That's
this.
Right.
Classical. A wrap-up that connects with some things we were talking about earlier of how does the rhythm speak to you.
Right.
And whatnot. Just got to go with Cousins.
Nice.
Wow, they really do have a lot of significant C songs.
We got California English, Connect from the new record.
Yeah. Yep.
California English Part 2, of course.
Of course. Well, should we say that, you know, wrap things up and just, we want to answer questions from the
Vampire Campfire
fans. First, if you have any questions, because we want to start doing listener questions, please send an email to vampirecampfirepod@gmail.com, and we will try and answer that. And also, we have some real mail. We have a P.O. box in New York that we've gotten some mail. If you want to send us any physical mail, we read everything. We've already gotten some really lovely stuff, so please send us some questions, and we'll answer them here.
All right, and we'll see you all the next episode of Vampire Campfire.
Bear, you got the fire?
Yeah, I got the fire.
Thank you.